Hello, hello. Welcome in on a Saturday morning. Yes, it is the Golf Show. Brent Gunning and Sam McKee here, and the Golf Show is brought to you by your local Ontario Subaru dealers. Welcome to the uncommon performance in a Subaru with legendary, symmetrical, full-time, all-wheel drive. Very, very happy to have the folks at Subaru on board this year, just like we're oh so happy to be here with you. Now, I'm not going to lie. I wish it was a little nicer out there today, but I'm not going to step on any toes of my buddy Sam McKee. I'm going to say hello to him, and I'm sure he's going to give us a lovely weather report. Sammy, how you doing?
Good morning, Gunner. I'm doing very well this morning. I wish I had better news about the weather today. If you were heading out to play golf, it's not going to be pleasant. We're looking at about 6 degrees, a little rain, some wind. It's just not pleasant out there. I came in this morning into the studio, and I had a sweater and my FootJoy jacket on. Big golf guy move by me, and I was cold. So if you're going out, bundle up, bring your umbrella, bring your good attitude. But tomorrow is the day. Tomorrow is the day. And I think everybody in Toronto area knows it. It's the day for golf. We're looking at a high of, you know, around 14, 15, sunny, maybe even going up a little higher, above 15. So that's the day to head out on the course Sunday. I'm sure all the courses in the GTA are going to be rammed with dummies like you and me.
Yes, they will be. And hey, maybe even some non-dummies out there, but let's be honest, we are who we are. And I can't wait to see. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to say I'm happy to see a jam tee sheet. Happy for the courses, unhappy for me. You know, I'm so wistful of our days, of our 7-10. You know, we do have our running joke that any course out there who needs a pace setter, just let us go out first, and we guarantee if people use us as the rabbit, you will have a great, great pace out there on the course, because we love to move fast and we love to be out early.
I played Humber Valley yesterday, and there was a...
Near and dear to my heart.
There was a... it's a great course. There was a little frost delay, so it pushed things back about a half an hour. And then, so they let their employees out first. They have like an employee tee time, so there was a foursome that went out. And
wonder if my guy Rick at Humber Valley was out there. Shout out
guarantee.
To Rick.
Oh, and also I just have to mention this, and I know you will love this. So I was walking up to the pro shop there, and they always have a Leaf jersey in there.
It's a half hockey pro shop.
It's a really hilarious pro shop. It's full of just trinkets and things. But the jersey they had hanging in there was Mark Giordano. They had two Mark Giordano Leaf jerseys hanging in there for sale. And I love the idea of going to play Humber Valley and be like, you know what I want? I'm going to buy a Mark Giordano jersey along with my tee time this morning. But I love that. So, so they had the employees go out, and they set the pace pretty well. I was the third time out, so I was in the third group. So we were moving along great. The pace was excellent. There was a good group in front of us. I played with some old boys who were moving along great. And then we got to the back nine, because they always let off the nine holers, right, off the back at the start of the day, which is great. If you got to go out there and play nine holes, you got a day ahead of you. So...
You know, some people have to work for a living. I know it's like foreign to the idea of us that you can only play nine.
But... And even I pushed a little bit playing 18 yesterday. I was a little rushed. I hate being rushed. But so we got to about the 13th there before the par three by the water. So maybe 14 or 13. And we had caught the nine holers. And there was a group of young guys that were probably honestly like 12, 13. They weren't very old. They were falling behind. And so for me, this is a very, very sort of, it's a tough one because I really love the growth of the game. And it's important to have these places that are sort of gateways into the game, right? Like Humber Valley, where you can go out there and it's a pretty forgiving course. If you're a younger person or if you're just learning to play, it's not the worst place to play. They're in Scarlett, you know, Dentonia. They're places that are a little bit more forgiving than, say, Don Valley or Tam O'Shanter would be. So they're falling pretty badly behind, and they go to the wrong hole. Like, they're just having a tough time out there. And I got caught in the middle. So I didn't say anything to him when we went past the first time. And so we get onto the first of the two par fives, which is number 16. And they're coming down 17.
And for those of you who don't know, it is two par fives that just basically
right back to back. And so anyways, he was on our fairway, and he had hit his drive over into our fairway. And he was sitting there, and he was kind of and he duffed one, and he was not having the best time. And the group behind him, one of the old guys, the guy might as well just been driving in Mad Max, flying up there. And I was like, oh, boy, what's about to happen here? And so he takes, I guess the kid had forgot his head cover on the tee box or whatever.
He's just having a day.
He comes up with his head cover and he throws the head cover at the kid.
Come on.
And he's like, oh, come on. He's like, yeah, you forgot your head cover. Oh, and he just is like, just MFing him.
Yeah.
And he's 13. You know, it's like when you're that age, that's horrifying.
Oh,
that
my
is
God.
The most embarrassing thing. Like, you don't have the within you to be like if they did that to me, the guy's getting,
oh God,
it's not going to end well for him. It's coming back at him. So he just sits there. He takes this guy's tongue lashing. So I walk over to the kid after it happens, and I'm like,
look at you.
I said, look, man, don't be discouraged. I understand how that makes you feel. Like, I kind of had a heart-to-heart with the kid, and I said,
look at you.
I just said, you got to play faster. I'm like, regardless of what he said to you, that was rude, but you'd still have to play a little bit faster. You have to understand at these city courses, it's a really fast game. You have to play a little quicker. And he's like, oh, I appreciate it, buddy. I appreciate it. And so we get up to the next tee box, and they're like, did you guys lose a 9-iron? And we're like, no, we didn't. The kid comes sprinting back, forgot his 9-iron.
The guy who had yelled at him about the head cover.
No, 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 the kid. Oh. The kid that got yelled at had forgotten his 9-iron, too. So he was having a horrible day, the poor kid. So I understand when you go to a city course and the old boys are out there and you play quick like I do and you do and you play fast, I understand it can be frustrating. But you also have to think back that you were a beginner at one time, too, and it's tough. So I just wanted to say that. I understand, but at the same time, maybe don't throw the head cover at the kid and maybe don't give him a tongue lashing. You can be nice about it. You can always be nice about it. So there you go, Gunner.
That story right there is why I'm done with honorary. We just need to make you, I'm not going to get you paid, sorry. We just need to make you, you are no longer honorary. As far as the golf show is concerned, you are an official marshal at all City of Toronto courses right now, because that right there is exactly, look, it's all, you can't be all steel, what is it, the velvet glove and the iron fist,
yes,
something like that. You can't be all one or the other. Can't be out there coddling left, right, and center, but you can't just be, you know, some jerk screaming at a 13-year-old at, I assume, 7:30 on a Thursday or Friday morning. And now we'll bring in Kevin, who's definitely not a jerk because he's got up early to talk with us. And I'm sure he doesn't want to hear of anybody getting yelled at a golf course either. The Chief Sport Officer for Golf Canada. What a lofty title to be joining us at this time on a Saturday. Kevin, how are you doing today?
Guys, how are you? Thanks for having me on. Great to talk to you.
Kevin's a golf guy. He was up at the crack of dawn, so we don't have to worry about that. It's not that early. It's 9 in the morning. He's fine, right, Kevin?
Yeah, no, it's all good. I'm actually out in Waterloo this morning with my son at his 7-on-7 football, so we've been at it for a few hours.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's fine.
Happy to be on.
Kevin's had lunch already.
I gotta say, my favorite thing about all of us golf guys is if you text or try to get in contact too early on in the season or too late in the season, there's almost always another sport that is getting, not in the way, but is involved as well. I can't tell you how many times we've been looking for tee times late in the year. It's, okay, hold on, I'm getting off the ice in 20 minutes. I'll figure something out for you. So I love to hear that you're out and at it playing seven or watching some 7-on-7 football out in Waterloo. Of course, we want to get you on to talk about, you know, Golf Canada. My buddy McKee sends me this great report basically you guys put out about trying to grow the game, and we always hear about grow the game in terms of we want people playing it recreationally, and of course we do, but the ultimate goal, I think, from a sports governing body is you want to have people who are playing it at the highest possible level. You know, we all know what Brooke Henderson has done on the LPGA Tour. There seems to be a stable of guys who are kind of following or nipping at Corey Connors' heels on the men's side. You know, what does it mean to grow in the game, to have these players who aren't just, hey, look, there's a couple of Canadians in the field, but they're really in contention week in and week out, both on the men's and women's side?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a lot of excitement about what the players are doing, and full credit to everybody out on tour right now for doing a great job. We think that Canada is a country that's super passionate about golf, as you guys know. There's a lot of golf played in Canada, and we believe that there's still more upside in terms of the number of world-class players that can emerge coming from Canada, and Golf Canada and I know others involved in golf around the country are really committed and increasingly investing in trying to develop some great players.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a really important thing for Canada to be able to have these kind of people at the pinnacle of the sport. And, you know, what is the kind of pipeline like for that? You know, I'm always somebody who's watching, like, the Drive, Chip, and Putt going on Masters Week, and it feels like every single time I'm watching, oh, there's a Canadian popping up in contention in a certain division. And, you know, I know we've had Canadians win you know, age ranges there. What is, or just how difficult is it to take somebody who kind of shows promise at the beginning or early on, and one, I guess, identifying that person, and then two, kind of helping shepherd them along? Of course, it's them doing the work, but kind of taking a 8, 9, 10 year old, I don't know, maybe that's too late to even start looking at people and saying, how do we get this person to a college program, how do we get them on to one of the best tours in the world? Like, what exactly is the work that goes from taking somebody once you identify them, or they identify themselves early on, to kind of helping them reach those highest levels?
It's a long journey, and it's a complicated journey. And the way we think about it is, the more prospects that we can have that are Canadians that have an opportunity to play at the highest level, then the more players that will eventually emerge. And so there's some things, you know, nationwide and as a golf system in our country that we're really focused on, like trying to create more access and more opportunities for juniors to play and practice at the right type of facilities. Obviously, the number of juniors playing the game and increasing that is going to help us increase the number of world-class players. And then as they're emerging and proceeding in their competitive journey, we and others want to make sure that we're supportive of them to make available the best coaching, the best training opportunities, the best funding. It takes a long time and a lot of investment to be able to emerge at a world-class level. So, you know, Golf Canada and other stakeholders in Canadian golf are very invested in making sure that our players have the highest probability of reaching the LPGA and the PGA Tour.
So, Kevin, you know, sort of the perception of golf in terms of the type of people that play it, and, you know, maybe a little higher class sort of sport, and maybe, you know, it's kind of a less accessible and sort of a harder thing to kind of, you know, get into if maybe you're on the less fortunate side of things. But if you're saying that, there could be a whole talent pool that you're cutting out from if you're kind of looking at it that way. How do you kind of, you know, bridge the gap between maybe some talent that may be in other parts of sort of, I don't know, maybe the tax bracket's the wrong way to put it, but just in other parts of the world or other parts of Canada, sort of to bridge the gap from the less fortunate that may be talented and want to get into the game of golf that could sort of lead to your goal of 30 players on the LPGA and PGA Tour?
Yeah, that's an important point, and it's 100% something that we're focused on. Like, if Canada is going to continue to emerge as a globally significant golf country, golf needs to draw from all parts of the Canadian population for its talent pool. And so we're doing as much as we can to diversify the participation base of the sport to make sure that kids from all parts of all Canadian backgrounds and all socioeconomic levels have that opportunity. So specifically, you know, you guys might be aware, and some people I'm sure are aware, that we are bringing the first tee program up from the United States and launching it nationwide in Canada, which is going to provide a lot of really welcoming entry-level opportunities for Canadians that come from all sorts of different backgrounds. We've received some fantastic financial support from some philanthropic partners, from corporate partners like our friends at RBC, who are really helping to drive the scaling up of the first tee program across Canada, which in the end, as you guys mentioned, like, the more kids from different backgrounds that are playing the sport and receiving the coaching and receiving the mentorship opportunities, the higher the chance that that kids from all sorts of Canadian backgrounds are going to emerge as world-class players on the global stage. We need to make sure that the participation base of Canadian golf continues to evolve so that the demographics of golfers match the demographics of multicultural Canada. And that's something that, as a national governing body, Golf Canada is very committed to.
So, and then what role, I guess, because, you know, Toronto's a huge sort of talent base, if you will, tons of people here. And what sort of role do the Toronto municipal courses play in that? Because I went to Humber Valley yesterday, and it's a great track, and I saw a bunch of Golf Canada stuff partnered up with there. I know my friend Gunner, who's co-hosting the show, he went to a great event there last year. I, I love the Toronto Municipal courses, and I think it's a huge opportunity to sort of bring people in because that's a kind of a gateway and sort of a good place to fall in love with the game.
No question about it. And I saw your video from Humber Valley.
Oh,
like
did?
Whoa.
Oh, baby.
Yeah. We, you know, I myself started playing the game at Don Valley. So I'm a Toronto Muni player as well. And as you mentioned, like the population that we have in Toronto and the significance of those municipal courses is it can't be overstated, really. Like, it's the entry point to the game for so many people that are involved in Canadian golf, and especially obviously in the GTA. And, you know, so we're fortunate again, like the first tee program, thanks to the support of RBC, we're going to be able to bring the first tee program to Humber Valley and Tam O'Shanter to start in terms of the municipal courses in Toronto. And hopefully that'll provide an even better on-ramp to the game for kids throughout the GTA.
Yeah, that event that the McKee mentions, it actually was the RBC first tee event with Harold Varner III. And, you know, as a guy, you started playing the game at Don Valley. I actually started at Humber Valley. And, you know, seeing I'm a man in my 30s. I got a kid of my own now. It's not hitting home quite the same. But I can only imagine being 12 years old and sitting there at a clinic and watching a PGA Tour player, you know, in front of my eyes just kind of shooting the breeze with you. And it's, you know, hey, not to say Harold Varner III is going to be at every one, but having events like that just really kind of help grow the game. You know, something else I think is really important, it's something I'll be honest, I gave myself a little slap on the wrist because I was too late getting going on it, is just becoming a member of Golf Canada. You know, I don't know how much it is that's kind of under your purview being the chief sport officer, but just if you're somebody out there who plays, can you give us the little sales pitch on becoming a member and joining Golf Canada? Because I think, one, it's a way to kind of pump a little bit more money into the coffers of a sport that we all love so much. And then, two, there are definitely some benefits you get out of it. So could you just, if you're able to, could you just speak to the benefits of becoming a Golf Canada member?
Absolutely. Yeah, being a member of Golf Canada is one of the best ways to support the growth and health and vitality of our sport across the country. And it does come with benefits as a member, as you mentioned. You know, one of the primary things that Golf Canada members have access to is an official handicap, which allows you to, yeah, compete, play in tournaments, whether it be, you know, the Ontario Amateur or the Canadian Amateur or the RBC Scramble or just even a member guest. So the official handicap is important for that. We also, all Golf Canada members are also able to access incident protection insurance. So if anything happens to their equipment, then there is obviously people invest a lot in their equipment. And if their clubs are lost, stolen, or otherwise damaged, there's some protection for that significant investment. So there's a lot of benefits. Those two are probably top of the list. But yeah, we're appreciative of all the members of Golf Canada, and we'd encourage all the golfers out there to consider joining the association as well.
So first thing about that is I love the new app this year. The app is the improvements have been made. I have it on my Apple Watch now, so you can keep track of your putts, and I'm keeping track of the putts and the stats and the scrambling numbers and all that stuff starting to show up. And I'm like, oh God, this isn't what I was envisioning. Like, the numbers aren't as high as I was hoping for. The second part is, you know, maybe we could have an off-air conversation about this, Kevin, but what's the process of going through to make a claim about a broken club? Because I may or may not have snapped the head off my driver last year in my last round.
I heard about that. I got a little intel that you might be a beneficiary of the protection program. We'll have to take that one offline.
All right. So my next question for you is, it's a pretty simple one. And, you know, after a couple years of not having our National Open here, it must be just so exciting to have the RBC Canadian Open here at a real gem of Canada, Royal St. George's in Toronto. You guys must just be really fired up to finally have our National Open back here after 2 years away.
Unquestionably, you know, I'll tell you guys, the buzz around it this year is extraordinary. You know, the hospitality sales, ticket sales, just the anticipation for the event is understandably very high, right? People want to get out. They want to have a good time. They want to watch the best players in the world play. You know, we've got Scottie Scheffler, world number one, coming. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's going to be a really robust field. And the entertainment options around the event with Maroon 5 and Flo Rida being two concerts that will be part of the event as well. It's just, I think it's going to be a great kickoff to summer in Toronto, and hopefully some sense of normalcy and people getting to enjoy being with each other and, you know, a classic summer event in the RBC Canadian Open.
Yeah, well said, Kevin. It is one of my favorite weeks of the year, and we've been without it for way, way too long. And also want to give a shout-out, CP Women's Open. That'll be coming back. That's not as local for us, so not as front of mind, but very, very happy to have both of our national opens mm-hmm. back. RBC, Canadian Open at St. George's. And, Kevin, I'll give you just a little bit of insight on this. Sam McKee's mom is going to the Flo Rida concert. She got tickets. So everybody is excited about this. Kevin,
Apple
thanks
bottom
so,
jeans.
Yeah, thank you so much, Kevin. I won't make you listen to any more of McKee's singing. Go enjoy some 7-on-7 football.
All right. Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
See you, buddy.
There he goes. I think our buddy now. Talked to him 2 or 3 times, and I laugh both of them. So officially our just, friend. And, yeah,
just,
go ahead.
Just another guy to add to the shameless text circle for old McKee here. But, yeah, I'll be texting him literally the second we go to break. But, yes, that's awesome. And it's a lofty goal, man. Like, I really, really do appreciate the fact how serious Canada Golf is about developing more players. And, like I said, I think it's really, really important not to go back to the municipal golf thing, but to keep these gateways open. Because, you know, you talk about the threat of losing those courses, and it's just like, if you lose those, where the hell is anyone going to go? In the GTA, I mean, they're just, you're going to get priced out. Like, listen, the reason I play at those courses is because they're reasonably priced. The second you go away from the municipal courses, you're looking at, you know, it can be over $110 to play around. That's no fun. So I think it's really, really important to sort of pull from, what was the multi-economical, the way that Kevin Blue said it was way better than me. I was like, tax bracket.
The reason he has a PhD and we're doing this at 9 a.m. Yeah.
Yeah, but I love the way he talked about that. And man, more Canadian golfers on tour is what we want. So maybe we could teach him how to putt a little better.
I mean, we know who designated Canadian putting coach is. He's busy with his own PGA Tour career right now. But we need Mac Hughes weekly clinics on all
bombs.
Practice screens. Yeah, Mac, I've been struggling with these 8-footers. Can't help you.
60
Do you have one that's 88 feet long? Got that in the bag. No problem. You're right though. Look, we love it having the Canadians in contention, but maybe my favorite thing of the last 2 or 3 years is that it's kind of stopped being a story. Okay, Hadwin's in the mix. Great. Let's, like, it is no longer ring the alarm bells. A Canadian has a share of the lead at 9:02 on a Thursday, and we have to hold on to this because who knows when we're going to have this moment. No, guys are just in the mix all the time. Corey Connors, 3 straight top 10s at the Masters. Mac Hughes in the final pairing of a major on Sunday last year. Like, and then, of course, Brooke Henderson having won a major of her own. Tons of other talented players on the LPGA Tour as well. Like, the game's in a great spot, but it's only going to get better if we keep kind of adding to that talent pool. Because, hey, I love Corey Connors, but I'd love, like, 5 of them out there. I want the President's Cup team to be dominated by Canadians.
Just all
that
Canadians?
Should be the goal. Yeah. And hey, also, one other thing on that. President's Cup coming to Canada in 2024 at Royal Montreal.
Wow, can you imagine that as a boys' weekend? Oh, boy.
Well, and I
get
doubt,
slippery.
Well, and there's no way the timing works out. But could you imagine if you have the F1 race in Montreal that weekend?
And the Leafs play in the summer.
And the Leafs play in the summer? Yeah, why not? Oh man.
Well, it's September, right?
That's the thing.
Yeah, a preseason game.
There is definitely, because here's the thing, the Ryder Cup is always on my birthday, and the Leafs always play a preseason game on my birthday.
Oh, okay,
and
great.
The thing is, President's Cup gets moved all over the place, kind of depending on jurisdiction and stuff. So who knows when they'll do it. You know what? Somebody who has some good insight, well, I'll be honest, I don't know how good his insight is on the President's Cup, but he wrote a book on the Ryder Cup coming out this year. We're going to talk to our good, good buddy, Shane Ryan, next. Of course, always, always love being on the Golf Show here with you. And the Golf Show is brought to you by your local Ontario Subaru dealers. Welcome to Uncommon Performance at a Subaru with legendary, symmetrical, full-time, all-wheel drive. Our good buddy Shane Ryan is next on the Golf Show right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Golf Show, Brent Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me. And as always, the Golf Show is brought to you by your local Ontario Subaru dealers. Welcome to the uncommon performance in a Subaru with legendary, symmetrical, full-time, all-wheel drive. Brent Gunning at Sam McKee here. Text line's wide open, 590-590. Please include your name and location. Let us know where you're pegging it up this week. Joining us right now, our good buddy. We had him on for a wonderful Ryder Cup preview, and it went kind of exactly how he said it was. The United States beat them down. Our buddy Shane Ryan has a wonderful book coming out about said Ryder Cup. You can read him in Golf Digest as well. Shane Ryan joins us now. Shane, how's it going, bud?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning. How you doing? It's been so long since we talked. We had a cold, dreary winter. We probably watched golf all winter long, and now we're starting to get to play some. But, I mean, what's it like for you getting the golf season going here? It's always weird with these wraparound seasons, but now, I mean, we've had our first major in the books. You know, Scottie Scheffler will never stop winning again, seemingly. You got the Zurich going on this week. What do you make of this time of the golf season between the first and second major of the year?
Yeah, you know, it's great. On a personal level, I'm about to play my first full round of the spring later today. Yeah. It's been great. I've been to the Honda Classic, which was, it was okay. I'm not going to try to pump up the Honda Classic too much, a tournament Sepp Straka wins. I went to the match play. I saw Scottie Scheffler win, and, you know, it was pretty cool. You guys mentioned the Ryder Cup, and that was a little bit of a leap of faith for Stricker to pick him. You know, he saw something in him, and he performed beautifully there. And, you know, the knock on him was, wow, this guy's really good. He hasn't won yet. Well, now look at him, you know, a few months later, and the guy's on top of the world, not only winning a WGC and his first PGA Tour event, but, of course, winning the Masters. So it's already been a really exciting start to the year, and it seems like there's these neat storylines all the time, including this week, seeing, you know, the two guys on top of the leaderboard, first of all, Shoffley and Cantley, Ryder Cup teammates, President's Cup teammates, doing so well. And then I think, you know, seeing Bill Haas and Jay Haas there, too, has been such a neat story. A 68-year-old man not only making the cut with his son, but I saw their 2-under so far today, and I think, you know, 15th place or something. All that kind of stuff is really exciting, and, you know, I'll be in Tulsa for the PGA in a month. It's just all really cool.
I couldn't believe he picked his dad. The guy's on, like, the money list exemption. He's got to make as much dough as he can, get as much status as he can. And he puts his faith in Pops, and he's rewarded, makes it to the weekend. Good for him there. I want to go back to what you said about Stricker showing some faith and picking Scheffler for the Ryder Cup team. You know, so often we talk about it with team sports that, you know, being a young player on a great team and a championship team and you go on a run, it kind of changes your perception of yourself early on. You go, oh, wow, I'm 21 and I'm a winner. I guess I can do this. And it kind of changes the player you become for the rest of your career. I'm not saying Scottie Scheffler was never going to win a major without this, but what do you think it did for a guy like that to be just part of a juggernaut team and have the show of faith by Stricker that earlier in his career? It feels to me like, again, not to say it gets credit for all the wins he's ripped off in the last couple of months here, but it feels to me like a moment like that and being a part of that group probably lets a guy believe in himself a little bit more going forward afterwards.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something there. It's a little bit of a chicken and the egg situation where, you know, it's not like Stricker picked him blindly from a hat or something like that. I mean, Scheffler, I think, was either top 10 or top 15 in all four majors last year. You know, he's really good in the big events. Obviously, he's got an amazing game. He was always going to win, right, eventually. But the quickness with which he won after that event, you know, knocking off his first PGA Tour and WGC match play, you know, beating John Rahm again, beating Poulter again, and then winning the Masters, it can't be a coincidence, right? I think that experience of the Ryder Cup and the faith that Stricker had in him, the great thing about that is that at the match play last year before the Ryder Cup, Scheffler beat Poulter and Rahm on the way to getting to the final match where he lost to Billy Horschel. And I texted Stricker after, you know, I was in the process of writing my book, and so I kind of wanted to get his take, and I said, you know, what do you think of all these Americans? And again, Horschel had just won, and he singled out Scheffler. Didn't even mention Horschel's name. He said, you know, amazing to see Scheffler beat Poulter and Rahm like that. And so, you know, that stuck in his brain, and that's part of the reason why he picked him. And just sort of like the weird poetry of circumstances, he ends up playing John Rahm on the Sunday in Ryder Cup singles. This guy, unbeatable John Rahm, and going out and crushing him, basically. And so I think, yeah, that confluence of events is so neat, and the confidence it sort of must have inspired him with I think he was always going to win. Maybe he was always going to win a major. I'm not so sure. But to have it happen so quickly, I think you're spot on. I think the Ryder Cup definitely played a role in that.
So what do you make of Jordan Spieth, Shane? You wrote a piece for Golf Digest about him Spiething it up, him missing the short putt, ended up winning the tournament. He's such a roller coaster ride right now, but it just seems that there's no one that gets you American guys as fired up as Jordan does. You know, my whole American golf Twitter, every time that he's doing anything, is just, it really, really seems to get the fans going. Like, he doesn't do it for me as much as he does it for a lot of people, obviously, but he really just seems like America's great golf hope. He's an everyman kind of guy, relatable. What do you feel about Jordan Spieth's start to the season and his win last week at Harbortown?
Yeah, so I was at Harbortown, and it was great that he won. I mean, just from a writing perspective, sweet, I get to write about Jordan Spieth rather than – it really looked like Sepp Straka was going to win again. And that
double
was the first tournament I've been at. That was the first tournament I've been at since the Honda. And I was like, if the two tournaments I've been to this year, Sepp Straka was close, I'm quitting golf, quitting journalism. So, no, he rescued that for me.
He's got to put you on retainer if that happens.
Right. At that point, he should at least pay me a little bit of a salary or something, a little good luck charm. I think what you said is, it's really interesting. I actually tweeted this the other day. There's something about certain guys, and there's not many of them. And, for me, Jordan Spieth does do it. There's something exciting about him that's hard to pinpoint because his personality, like, he's really nice and really smart, but his personality is, not something where you'd go, oh, this guy's electric. Like, look at all the crazy statements he's making. You know what I mean? He's not like that. But there's something about his game and the way he conducts himself, or maybe it's the way he looks, or maybe there's a special aura or energy around him or something that I think is just really exciting. The point I was making was, okay, in 2014, you had Rory McIlroy kind of being the main figure in golf. He won his two majors. And I think he's like that too. I think he's really kind of has that electricity about him. And then the next year in 15, you had Spieth winning his two majors, almost winning four. And it was the same thing. And I think since then, we haven't really had that. And I've missed it. I've missed having a guy like that. Now, you have some exceptions. Tiger winning the Masters and Phil winning the PGA, sure. Those were huge moments. But by and large, the people who have won, I don't think we've sort of captured that feeling with a young player like that since. And so, I think Spieth, it's so funny to watch him win that tournament at Hilton Head. He can't do anything boring to me, right? Like, he had to have missed that putt on Saturday on 18. He had to have missed that little gimme where you go, the minute he did that, I said, I know he's going to be in contention tomorrow. And I thought, he's going to lose by one or something like that, right? Because there's going to be Murphy's Law. There's going to be something where you can look back at that putt and go, man, if you just made that, he would have won. And so when he made the playoff, I said, well, this is just perfect. He's going to lose the playoff and everybody will be talking about that putt. But because he's Spieth, because he's unpredictable, because he's, this electricity sort of follows him. He goes and wins the playoff with that magnificent chip against Cantley from the sand. And he's exciting. I want to see him contend in majors again. I think I'm ready for it, and I think it's exciting for golf when he does.
Yeah, I'm kind of caught between both sides because I'm mostly with my co-host here, McKee, in that I see him and I'm like, yeah, okay, it's great. He's one of the guys. It's always good when he's in the mix, but he doesn't quite get me going the same way a guy like Rory does. But then I compare and contrast, mm-hmm. and no knock on this guy, but I look at Scottie Scheffler and I see him and he's playing great golf. But that doesn't feel like the number one player in the world to me. And I'm not taking anything away from Scheffler. He went out there and he had all the wins and he did it. And he has the points to be that guy. But it kind of says something to me, or it tells me that we don't have that, I don't know, for lack of a better term, like main character in golf. You know, I think about, and we, of course, we all go back to Tiger, and he held it for 100 years in a row, and nobody was ever within a sniff of him for number one player in the world. But when Rory had it, he had it for a long time. Even when DJ had it, it was a long run that he held it for. And you look at Rahm, it's a short run. Scheffler, who knows how long he's going to be able to hold on to it. It feels to me like the game is in such a good place because there's all of these different guys, and one week it's Rahm, and we mentioned Cantlay there. He's always seemingly in the mix. But for the game to really kind of truly take off going forward, it feels like we need there to be one of these guys to truly vault themselves to kind of the top of the pack, as opposed to everybody kind of passing the baton back and forth like we've seen for the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 years now.
Yeah, I totally agree. I, and it's always tougher in golf than other sports because you know, unless your name is Tiger, your game, if you're at the top, you kind of exist on a knife's edge. And we've seen that over and over. You know, if you're Rory or you're Spieth and you're on top of the world, or you're even like, you know, someone like Koepka, it's a pretty good bet that in a year you won't be anymore, or in 2 years, you know, things will be a lot different for you. It's not like tennis where, you know, if you're the best player, you're one-on-one constantly every single match, and you're probably going to advance to the finals of a lot of tournaments. And if you stay healthy, you're going to be a main character for a decade or more. I've got snooker on in the background. I don't know if you guys follow snooker at all, but like someone like Ronnie O'Sullivan, you know, just a guy who's always there.
That's the most snooker so name you could have possibly said. You could have that. Did you get that from the snooker name generator?
I wish I had one of those. That would be great. No, you know, it is. It's funny. I mean, there's another guy playing right now named Trump. So make of that what you will. It's a combination of that, of wanting these guys to be main characters for a long time, and golf kind of frustrating you in that sense, especially if you're used to Tiger. And then the other thing you talked about is if somebody is number one in the world, if somebody is a juggernaut, you sort of want them to have a larger than life persona in some way. And Rory has that. I think Spieth has that in his strange, neurotic way. But you're right. Scheffler doesn't feel like he does. And you look at it and you go, good for him. He's great. There's no doubt about it. And he's certainly got the attitude for golf, you know, that kind of even keel and believes in himself and all that. But you want something a little bit more. And I think there's maybe a little bit of frustration in like this underlying kind of unspoken frustration in the golf world where, okay, sometimes in the last couple of years, you've had one of the old guys win it, you know, Tiger or Phil, these legends, and that gives you a little taste of it. But we want something long lasting from somebody who we know that we're going to see for, you know, the next 10 years or whatever.
I sneaky love snooker too. And I just, it's a really, really fascinating thing to watch, and the strategy, and it's a great thing to watch. So I'm more of a darts guy.
I discovered darts too, and I play it constantly. So if you want to talk darts, you just let me know.
Dart hour this week when we get that going.
Our niche sport correspondent, Shane Ryan.
Here I am.
So I wanted to talk to you about Tiger because I'm having some thoughts. And I'm a diehard Tiger guy. He's one of my favorite athletes ever. I grew up at the perfect time when he was dominating, and there's just few guys that made me feel the way he does. I kind of want it to be over, Shane. I watched the Masters, and Thursday was amazing. You know, he shot 71 on the Thursday. He made the cut, and then Saturday happened, and it just I don't want to say done with it. The golf, like the previous question that Gunnar asked, golf is in such a great place with all the different players, and it's so exciting with all this power and everything that there is to it. But just watching Tiger at this point, after what he's been through, I'm kind of done with it, and I feel awful to say it, but boy, it's not going to get any better, and he's just going to play every major, and the coverage is always going to be there. I'm having some pretty tortured thoughts on Tiger at the moment, Shane. I don't know if you can help me work it out.
Yeah, well, join the club. I've had this for a little while. But I was a little biased because in 2014, I wrote a book about the young players of the PGA Tour. And so, you know, I was focused on Spieth and McIlroy and Justin Thomas and all those guys. And at the same time, I experienced the same exact thing you were talking about, where no matter what, Tiger dominates the coverage constantly. And for good reason, right? We can't say he hasn't earned it, for
and
sure.
And usually, Shane, I usually love that. Like, I'm the guy that's like, oh, I want to see Tiger chip and putt while there's guys actually playing golf. Like, I'm usually the guy that loves that. But anyways, continue.
No, yeah, but he's put us through the ringer over the years, right? So you probably everybody has their own personal point of, like, Tiger fatigue, and you've reached yours, which is understandable because, you know, look, last year he's in another major car accident where his life seems like it's in jeopardy. And then there's another comeback. And then there's all this, the crazy amount of hype at Augusta where he is the story. But we've been there before. We've been there before. It keeps happening over and over. And then he plays in a pretty mediocre way. So at the end, you're like, God, was the hype even justified? Like, why were we spending so much emotional energy on this? And, yeah, I think inevitably you get to a point, and maybe some people don't, but I think a lot of people get to a point where they say, I've been through the Tiger cycle enough. You know, it has been, 25 years, basically, of this, a little bit more even. That we're kind of sick of it. You know, there is a sport out there. We love the sport. There's other things happening. How long are we going to have to do this? Yeah. Some people want to do it forever. Some people will be like you were, where it's like, show me Tiger, you know, practicing sand shots while the final round of the Masters is going on. And other people will eventually reach a point where they say enough.
Well, and yeah, like on Sunday at the Masters, we're watching an awesome, you know, final pair, two of the great young stars in the game. We see 18, okay, like we saw Tiger finish up, that's fine. We see him do the big walk through the alley there where he won in 2019. The people are cheering him, like, oh, okay, this is great. He walks into Butler Cabin, yep. He goes down the steps, like, oh my God, those steps are not pretty. Anyways, then we go and we're watching golf. Then it flashes back to him, like, making travel plans with his, like, family. We're like, okay, like, we get it. Like, he's there. Like, I feel terrible that I'm saying this because I'm such a Tiger fan and I've loved what he's given us. But, man, I've reached my saturation point, Ryan. I really have.
Yeah, well, try writing about it for a living. Yeah. Every single thing. Like, oh, my, Tiger said he might go to St. Andrews. And that's, like, you know, the highest, like, traffic story.
Is he really going to play the U.S. Open? Like, that? Like, we watched him at Augusta. Right. Like, really? Please.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole thing is so strange. And, you know, but, I mean, at the same time, there are elements of the story that are so interesting at times, you know. And so, and people care about him. You know, if you were in charge of, you know, golf.com or whatever, and you looked at your metrics, guess what? Like, yeah, the highest traffic stories are all the Tiger stuff. So the coverage follows what people want, right? It's not like, oh, forcing Tiger down our throat. Not really. This is what people, like, respond to. So there are elements of that. But, yeah, then you go, oh, my God, enough. We have other stuff going on in this world. So I'm with you. I'm with you on the Tiger fatigue. And I can't help you, though. I think you are in this for life, unless you become a hermit and go to the Yukon or whatever the hermit.
Maybe
you'll
be a Seb Straka guy now.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to join you in that, but I wish you the best of luck. And okay, I will let you know what tournaments I'll be at in the future.
There you go. So when he's going to be in the winner's circle ahead of time. I agree mostly with what you guys say about Tiger there. The only thing I'd kind of add on that is, and I don't know that he has it in him, it feels like he needs the nail in the coffin where he does it himself. He needs to say, okay, 150th Open Championship, I am actually going to make this all about me, and it'll be the last competitive major. And maybe he doesn't want to make it that one because he has so much respect for the Open or something like that, but it feels like he needs to have the moment, because unless he comes out and says it, we're always going to be wondering, because there's always going to be reports of, oh, he was actually hitting it pretty well at Medalist, and it just feels like we're going to be doing this forever.
Oh, Joe LaCava's in Florida.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. Okay, other old guy I have to talk to you about, because much unlike Tiger, where I am taking in every second and every ounce of information I can, I have tried to kind of completely ignore this Phil Mickelson thing. It's just weird. I don't like it. I'm not going to sit here and say I'm a Phil guy, but him not being at the Masters, potentially because of a feud, beef, a suspension, who knows, with the PGA Tour, I don't like it. What's going on with Phil Mickelson right now? Is he in exile, or do we expect to see him play? Do you know what's going on with Phil Mickelson, Shane?
I think he's blowing up his life, to put it really succinctly. It's such a strange story, like you said. He's obviously got a lot of resentment to the PGA Tour, which is so strange for me. But I don't know. You guys probably know your fair share of wealthy people. I think there are a lot of good wealthy people, but I think we've also seen how it can break somebody's brain over time. And, you know, whether it's his gambling debts, and it's hard to speculate because all this stuff is, you know, you don't want to, like, libel the guy or slander him or whatever. But something happened with Phil where something in his brain flipped and he started resenting the PGA Tour, this organization that, you know, made him fabulously wealthy. He wanted his, you know, his TV rights, his video rights, and all this, these things that are just not done in any, you know, professional league, and it doesn't make any sense, the things he's requesting. And he goes from there to the Saudi thing, where clearly it's a revenge play against the PGA Tour because of his bitterness. He doesn't care. Like, look, we can't expect him to be, like, the most moral man in the universe. He doesn't care who he's getting into bed with. And so he does the Saudi thing, and he's going to make this bold, like, he's going to bring all these people with him, and he's got the stature to do it, maybe. It's a little bit scary. And then he goes on this rant to Alan Shipnuck and has that published where, you know, look, when you're in bed with the Saudis, don't call them murderers, right, on the phone. I mean, that's not their thing. They're not going to like that.
And so, I mean, you can do it, but not while you're in business with them, yeah.
Yeah, not while you're in business with them, man. Not without consequences. And if the consequences are that you're no longer in the league, well, you've gotten off pretty easy as far as those people are concerned. So he goes through all of that, and you know, now at this point, he loses that too. So where is he? He's in exile, but he's lost his breakaway thing. I don't know. I just think he seems like somebody careening to me. Like when you see someone circling down the drain, to me, that's Phil Mickelson right now. And even at Hilton Head, you had Davis Love in his press conference say, talking about the Ryder Cup, well, it looks like we might have an opening at Bethpage. And so he's messed that up for himself, too. He's probably not going to be a Ryder Cup captain now. So I don't know. It's really sad and just unpredictable and crazy. But inevitable, based on who the guy is, maybe. It's just, yeah, I'm with you. It's so strange, and it's not fun.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where we all land on it, Shane. Man, tons of fun. Kind of a bummer to end the conversation.
You coming to Canada for the RBC Open there, Shane, or no?
Yeah, will Seb Straka be in the field? We got to find out. Yeah,
I was going to say, is Seb in the field? No, you know, I've never been there, and I really want to go.
Really?
Sometime. I don't know if I told you guys this, but I grew up in upstate New York, and yeah, way upstate in the Adirondack Mountains. And I grew up going to Montreal Expos games. Obviously, when I was 18, I grew up going to Montreal and drinking with my friends because it was allowed there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm a big Canada guy, and especially I really like Montreal, and I want to see more of Canada. I've never been there, but I really hope to one day.
Let me give you the sales pitch. Toronto in June is one of the greatest places in the world, and St. George's, the golf course, is one of the nicest golf courses in the world. So
number two course in the country this year.
Bend the ear of Golf Digest. Come up and cover Seb Straka's win at the Canadian Open.
Or Seb Straka. Just tell him to get you on the PJ because you're good luck. And otherwise, Seb, 2024, yeah. President's Cup in Montreal. So yeah, there we go.
There you go.
100%. 100% I'll be at that. And yeah, I will tell Seb, come on, I'm worth at least a plane ticket, right?
Come on. Get our guy Shane here. Shane Ryan, thanks so much, buddy. Really, really enjoyed the chat today.
All right, thanks, guys. Always fun.
There he goes. Quickly on this, I love our golf guests. Well, I mean, it's the golf show. They're all golf guests. But they are all niche sport correspondents. We had Luke Kerr-Dineen on, and I ended up talking with him about the lumberjack challenges that are on TV up here because he had guys in his backyard doing work, and he was blown away by it. So,
what was the guy's name? Ronnie O'Sullivan? Was that it? The
Ronnie
snooker?
O'Sullivan, the snooker player. And he was playing a guy named Trump because, of course.
There's not many shows on Canadian radio where you can come and get a snooker parallel while talking about golf. So there you go.
You know who would have loved that exact snippet of the golf show and only that exact snippet? Talking snooker and darts? That one's for you, Jeff Blair. The only time you would ever be listening to the golf show. We talk snooker and darts. I have to sneak this in before we get out of here, Sam McKee.
Let me have it.
We had potentially the greatest sponsorship in the history of golf announced this week.
Oh, thank you, Gunner.
Former guest, former friend of ours, we talked to him about hamburgers at the Dunvegan, John Daly and his son, now going as John Daly 2, no longer Lil John Daly, have signed a partnership with Hooters. And the thing I love about
Do you have the statement?
I don't have it in front of me.
Oh my God,
because
I just
remember that John Daly talking about it like they raised him. Basically, it's been a partnership with which me and my family have had a great relationship for years, and I hope to continue that into the future or something along those lines. Man,
I'm furiously digging for it here.
Sometimes a brand just hits perfectly with an athlete and two athletes.
And
it hit it.
I have seen my father's great relationship with Hooters over the years, and I am proud to continue my family's association with this iconic brand. And he's a chip off the old block unit.
He really is.
He's my favorite golfer. I will be following him furiously.
Let's go. That's our guy for the next generation. Gen Z. Here we go. Sam McKee and Brent Gunning. Get it wherever you get your pods. Golf Show brought to you by Subaru. Thanks so much for listening today on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.